Hi and hello and welcome to the RBR.music podcast. My name is Steve Curley and as always I'm joined by the creator of the RBR.music Instagram page, Jordan Murray. Hello, sir.
Hello, young man.
Where each episode, in true RBR fashion, we're bringing you classic and new album reviews. Except we're not, are we, Jordan?
We certainly aren't. We've had enough of that nonsense.
We are continuing our little segue into music docos. It is our mission to cut through the noise to discuss the sound and vision. So on the RBR.music radar this episode, we're going to be discussing Searching for the Sugar Man, a 2012 documentary film about a South African cultural phenomena for an American musician called Sixto Rodriguez, written and directed by Swedish filmmaker Malik Bendjelloul, who sadly passed away in 2014. Over to you, George.
Okay, here we go. In 1970, a Mexican-American singer-songwriter called Sixto Rodriguez released an album called Cold Fact, a collection of the poetic and socially engaged songs that he had been singing around the bars and dives of Detroit, Michigan. Songs like Sugar Man, which was about drugs. Me, personally, I hadn't heard of him before this film. He's a stylish, mysterious figure in dark glasses. He looks like a Mexican Bob Dylan, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
His excitable producers were convinced this would make him the next big thing, the next Dylan. It, of course, didn't. Rodriguez followed the album up in 1971 with another album called Coming From Reality. But despite what were apparently decent reviews in the music press, Rodriguez's albums sold badly. He was unceremoniously dropped by his record label and ended up turning to manual labour to make ends meet. Then a strange thing happened. A bootleg copy of Cold Fact seems to have found its way to apartheid-era South Africa, where it became a word-of-mouth hit among the white liberal classes. And his powerful voice became a soundtrack for the white's anti-apartheid movement. So this is way, way before the internet and smartphones and things. So there was a lot of white people in South Africa that were really upset with the segregation that was going on, that blacks weren't allowed to do certain things, but they weren't allowed to speak up about it or else they'd be put in prison. And when they heard this album, and this is what I bang on about quite often on these episodes, is how music can open doors for you. They realised that these songs were a way forward, that someone understood the oppression that the blacks were going through, that the whites couldn't help the fellow countrymen. So that's a really interesting sort of take that I found in the documentary. Going back to the album, Scenting a Hit, South African record labels picked up distribution rights from Rodriguez's US label, Sussex Records, and shifted something in the region of 500,000 copies. That figure was plucked out of the air by one of the people interviewed, but I'm going with it. Despite some of its songs on the album being banned on South African radio, one interviewee claimed that as far as white South Africans were concerned, Cold Fact was as big as Abbey Road or Bridge Over Troubled Water. The companies paid royalties to the American company, but none of the money appears to have made it back to Rodriguez, and he didn't hear the news that he was famous there. When challenged on this point, the company's boss, Clarence Avant, becomes very testy and defensive on camera. There's a strong possibility he may have sold these rights for absolutely nothing, for a song anyway. I have no proof of this, but that's what I kind of took from the documentary, because he got really annoyed when he was questioned about it.
Mm.
But what happened to Rodriguez in the end? His South African fans remained mystified, and some even circulated an urban myth that he took his own life on stage. There is something fascinating in the reclusive rock star who vanishes in real life. It is quite commonplace if we think of Syd Barrett or Peter Green. Or who was that player in the Manic Street Preachers? He just vanished, didn't he?
Oh, the bassist,
His bandmates didn't even know where he's gone. They still pay him royalties into the bank account, but they just don't know where he is. It's not unknown for people just to disappear. But none of these examples exactly matches the extraordinary case of Rodriguez. The truth about him, hard to get at in that pre-internet age, turned out to be stranger than fiction. Why were his records so big in South Africa? The movie spells it out. But his Latino identity was surely key as well. Being Mexican, he escaped the white-black divide. Liberal South African whites, music lovers, could embrace him more easily. Yet show business and the music would be very cruel to Rodriguez. Maybe he deserved as much fame as Dylan or Leonard Cohen or Joni Mitchell. Or a little bit of fame at least. But it was not to be. In the 21st century, America's entertainment industry may take global markets, but much more seriously. Back in the 1970s, being popular outside the US was more of an irrelevance, and not paying artists their foreign royalties or alerting them to their overseas popularity was something companies could perhaps get away with more easily. Career management was more chaotic as well. Here, though, we come to the flaw in the movie. It gives the audience the impression that after Rodriguez was dropped by the label, he simply collapsed into non-showbiz obscurity until his South African fan base was mobilised, which the director is guilty of the sin of omission. A rudimentary internet search shows that Rodriguez's musical career did not vanish the way the film implies, and the film has clearly skated round some facts. But by and large, it's true to its case study. Well, the broad thesis holds up, and searching for Sugar Man is an interesting footnote to a species of secret or denied cultural history. The history of South Africa's white liberal classes, the fabric of whose lives may be overlooked by social historians. Not all whites in South Africa were racists. Many were trapped by history and fate and the apartheid laws they detested. Rodriguez's music gave them a voice and helped indirectly to change things. This movie might itself make a modest contribution to rewriting the history of white South Africa. And that's how music opens doors. And I think this documentary helps the cause of showing a strong, powerful counterculture history of South Africa. Mm. So what do you say about that, my lad?
Well, it's a lot of information, all very valuable. whilst we've tiptoed into this realm of discussing and reviewing music docos, we sort of have two sides to the sword. There's the understanding of the importance of the musical content storytelling, which Jordan has just, I think, verbalised perfectly, really, surmising and sort of mini-synopsising the film itself. And then there's the other side to it. There's the fact that it's a piece of entertainment art as well. And art within art is always quite interesting because you have to look at it on two different levels. You have to understand it for its own art, i.e. the film, and then the story behind the film. And I think, George, you've perfectly told the story of the film and this fascinating but simple, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but I said to you before, didn't before we started recording, that it's quite a simple story. It's quite fascinating and intriguing, but it is an unknown American musician who sells a few records, yep, more than anyone expected in South Africa, and is presumed dead due to urban myth, and then isn't. And that is the simplicity of it, but what you've highlighted...
Sorry for any spoilers, by the way. It's not...
Well, yeah, I think...
It was... This movie was made in 2012, and that was just a tongue-in-cheek comment. Yeah, this movie was made in 2012, and I think... Did they find him in 1998?
1998, yeah. I think... What's quite fascinating about that is, at first I just listened and watched and, okay, so a pop star, you know, wasn't alive, and okay, and then he is, and you sort of go, oh, well, okay. It took me a few seconds to sort of, I wouldn't say shocked by it, because there is obviously a couple of different urban myths of how he did pass away, which we'll come back around to, but I think at the point of understanding that he wasn't, it was a bit of a, oh shit, okay, that's interesting. But then at the same time, you're like, well, okay, maybe to be expected. It's at that point the documentary does take a bit of a turn in its storytelling. The first thing I think I'd like to sort of highlight from a filmmaking point of view, this documentary is absolutely beautiful. It is shot with so much... visual awareness of the surroundings of the story. There's some amazing shots of South Africa. There's also some beautiful shots of American cities, because as they're telling the story of trying to understand where he was from and trying to sort of investigate
Detroit,
I believe, isn't a fantastic part of the world, but it looks amazing, and it's a lot of the footage is shot, you know, in and around of the filmmaking, but there's a bit of stock footage there as well, and everything's visually pleasing. There's no awkwardness of the film. It does take a creative change towards the end, and I believe that was due to the filmmaker's choice and running out of budget. I believe he shot most of the film on like a Super 8 film, and then he shifted to sort of a digital smartphone app. I think he used a 8mm vintage camera app, which I thought was quite interesting, and you can, knowing that, you can see a little bit of a difference in how it starts and how it ends. Mm-hmm. It's very of its era at the initial sort of 70-80% of the film, and then it does take a bit of a modern twist and change. There's some fantastic sort of pieces to camera and vox pop stories being told that really have the building blocks of a story to get engaged with. And I think the other thing we should mention is, I hadn't seen this film before. I think you had, Jordan. You'd seen this.
I saw it when it came out, and in 2012. Well, it came out. I may have seen it in 2013, but you know, yeah, around the time it came out. And I've not watched it since. Well, I watched it for the podcast, obviously. Yeah. But since 2013 to last week, let's say, I've not really watched it, but it stuck with me. Like, the imagery of it, it reminded me of one of my favourite albums, of just the warmth it gives me, and I don't know why I just didn't go back to this documentary again and again and again. But it stuck with me, this album. I mean, this documentary. It's like a favourite album of mine. It's just, I go back and think about it, although I haven't gone back and watched the movie again, the documentary again and again. It's just, the imagery sticks with you. The songs stick with you. I became quite a fan of his after watching this documentary and I was listening to his albums. And they certainly have lasted the test of time. And I am surprised that he never sold more anywhere besides South Africa. Because he is, as I pointed out previously, as good as Leonard Cohen, Joni Mitchell, you know, he's up there. But part of me thinks maybe at the time, the name Rodriguez just didn't sit comfortably with American listeners. I don't know, that's just a presumption.
Well, I think as well, I mean, you know, in a flooded market around that time as well, and yeah. I mean, I get Bob Dylan and James Taylor vibes from him straight away. I don't mean vocally, I just mean looking at him and his kind of like hippie vibe is very James Taylor, and his sort of sound has got sort of a Bob Dylan-ness to it. It's not unfair to say that, you know, it is luck of the draw sometimes. I'm not saying people aren't talented and you know, but
you can see a lot of buskers in the city nowadays. Ten a penny, really. And some are very talented, but like you say, look at the draw. You never know.
It is, and also the way the documentary tells his life story once they figure out he is alive and hasn't passed away. I think he was a fairly simple man of means. I don't think he wanted for too much. So, you know, yes, he's clearly very talented, and he has a talent to be a musician and should have tested the time of being a musician. But ultimately, he went back to, I think he refers to construction and property, and he was happy doing that. And I think one thing I took from the film was like a bit of a human story, is he's just a really nice man who just got on with life. And again, spoiler alert for anyone who does end up watching who hasn't seen it, it tells at the end that he gave most of the money that he eventually got from his sales away, you know, to his friends and family. And his daughter talks so fondly of him, and it's actually really nice to hear the words of when you eventually realise he's alive, and the people who knew him or know him, he's spoken so well of. But the documentary is definitely a two-parter for me. There's this mystical story and this story of South Africa and apartheid, and I suppose even Newsly, the all-in-one super app for iOS and Android. How does Newsly work, I hear you ask? Well, it picks up the most trending articles on the web on topics that you choose, and at any given moment reads them out in a natural human voice. For the first time ever, the entire web becomes listenable and all in one place. Browse articles from topics that you choose and start playing. Stop scrolling and start listening. You can follow topics such as sport, tech, business, science, or even music. They have a podcast as well. Explore trending podcasts from over 80 countries. Our podcast, the RBR.music podcast, is there too. I've started using it as my default podcast app, and they even have digital radio. So download and start using Newsly for free from www.newsly.me in the description. And if you use the promo code, that's RBRMUS, you'll receive 1 month free premium subscription. Go and give it a go. Like a musical Afrikaans kind of like trend, because I think a lot of Afrikaans young musicians aspired to his sound, and actually when you're listening to it, you can see, and from the documentary, this sort of sub pop culture of music, but actually it wasn't music. It was the ability to stand up and have a voice, because in this time, at the time in South Africa, you know, it was very locked state, wasn't it? You didn't get to hear the news. You were fed news that you were given, and as you said, a lot of white South Africa probably didn't have a voice that they wanted to.
They're
to
probably too scared speak. To speak.
Yeah.
To one another.
Well, they refer. What one part of the documentary refers to the vinyl and them, people, whomever they are, scratching the first track on the album, didn't they?
Yeah, because it was
physically, so it couldn't be played. So, and then obviously, I think bootlegging definitely was the thing that kind of got it played. But I mean, looking into the sort of success of the film as well, I mean, it's quite fascinating, really, for a documentary that isn't sort of spoke about on the broad scale. It did really well in Sundance 2012. I think it's in the top 50 all-time music doc.
Right.
For, I think it's Box Office Mojo, right. I read. And then everything, you know, Rotten Tomatoes and all the film websites, it's in like top hundreds. It's in 95% ratings, 9 out of 10, 8 out of 10. This is a really...
So you'll be shocked when you hear my star rating about this one. -3.
Well, I think one thing we should note as well is the reason we want to discuss this one is we had it recommended by quite a few people, right, George?
A few.
Which I think is great.
Yeah, we want an interaction. It's not that we don't know what to watch, but it's good that people have suggestions, and we latched onto this one and we've watched it, obviously. It's a very powerful watch. It's an easy watch, like you mentioned, but I think it's powerful in the way it's about revolution, but it's also about a fella that had no idea that any of this was going on because he was never told about it.
Mm. And not just him, people didn't know anything of him as well, which I find fascinating. A mystical...
Yeah, they didn't even know he was around. And the producers and things like that, when they get shown the album, they're like, oh, I remember him. And they take him, and it's, I don't think it's fake. So they take a moment and, you know, breathe deeply and just think, this guy was incredible. He's one of the most talented people I've ever worked with. He just didn't sell that much and he got dropped, unfortunately. But they were all like, amazed by,
I think,
how great he was.
The only
in the studio and things.
Bad word comes from the defensive record producer, doesn't it? Like he sort of, he doesn't badmouth him. I don't think I wouldn't say that, but he sort of like, he sort of refers to him as like a non-entity. Or he was never. And I got a bit sceptical. I think, like you said earlier on in the pod, Jord, that he's. There's definitely, he either knows something or he didn't do something enough to help the situation, or he turned a blind eye, in my opinion, again, not alleging. But I don't think there's a bad word, even when they're talking about, so if anyone hasn't watched it, the urban sort of rumours and myths that go around about him, that is he shot himself on stage or burnt himself alive on stage, George, are they the two?
Yep. But it's not
so,
like, obviously on stage is quite huge and takes your breath away a bit. But like you said before we started recording, it's not too far detached from reality, because it is believable, because pop stars, rock stars,
yeah,
do kill themselves. They suffer from like mental health and things. So, you know, it is believable. So to think that he is dead and that's why no one was searching for him, that's believable as well.
But I think what makes the film a really good piece of art away from a good story being told is the director very cleverly constantly feeds you with little kind of sort of little notions of storytelling meets a fact that might not be a fact because they don't know. And I think that allure and mystery is really well put together by the director. I think he's... Obviously, there's a process in documentary making. Most documentaries aren't scripted in the way kind of narrative film is. So, yes, they have structure and plan, but it almost feels like they couldn't plan this too much because they talk about a time that I think they get to a coffee shop and I think he's reached out through kind of primitive sort of internet forums and he's in contact with one other individual who has some information and they get together and they have basically no information together. Like they just...
They have the same information.
Yeah, yeah. It's all a bit nothingy and stuff. But even knowing that, you're being told the same semi-facts of what you've been told for the first 20, 30 minutes of the film. But you're still intrigued at this, like, well, okay, so what did you do next? And I definitely think the film, on not an intense level, but it keeps you on tender hooks. And then there's almost this, like, rock and roll style curtain reveal of this man who basically hasn't aged. He looks fantastic at whatever age he is when this was shot, because he's born in the 40s, so he must have been kind of, yeah, like, you know, heading into his 70s at this point. He looks brilliant. He doesn't look like he's remotely changed. I think he's got the same sunglasses on. He's got the same fantastic, like, 70s cool rock hair. And then you hear from him. And again, it's not always that you get to hear in a documentary or a story being told that the myth becomes alive. And I think that's what this film does. It kind of puts the life back into a myth of that I didn't even know or care about 50 minutes earlier in the film. You know, I didn't know about this artist. I didn't know his music. And I think it's a really clever way of kind of revealing, like a show and tell or a, you know, like a big reveal type. So I think it's a really good way of making a film because he could have done the...
I think it's definitely... Yeah, go on, sorry.
No, I was going to say, he could have done the narrative up to that point and then you sort of... You get a mini, you know, like a minimal reveal, and you don't know much more. Or you could have kind of hit the ground running straight away. Or you know, Rodriguez, he didn't die. Look how fantastic it is. Listen to the story, but it's just the way the story gets told. I just think, it's really fascinating, and it's about an hour and a half, maybe 85 minutes long, and it's perfectly placed. It seems to play out like a narrative more than a documentary storyteller.
Yeah, I think it's a documentary about Rodriguez. I think it's a really good advert for his music. But the way the movie unfolds and when it comes to getting close to the end of the movie and he does his first gig or concert, should I say, since being completely... didn't even realise that anyone knew his music. He was still working construction, still carrying refrigerators on his back down the stairs. There was a nice piece where one of his demolition mates was saying, I mean, I don't know how true this is, this could just be artistic interpretation, but he said he'd always wear, like, dapper suits and stuff when he, like, a proper poet. I thought that was quite a nice little nod towards his creative streak. But the concert, when you can see in the audience is getting filmed before he comes on stage, and there's some people enjoying themselves, and there's other people with their arms folded, and I just think, I bet they just don't believe it's going to be him. Because since the 70s, so there's like granddads, so this is the 90s now when it was getting filmed. This concert. So there's granddads in there, there's sons, there's the sons of the sons. You know, there's whole families there of all different ages, is the point I'm trying to make. And there's people in the audience are just like, well, I've paid my price to get in, but I still don't believe it's going to be. It's for the South Africans, it was like Elvis Presley or Jim Morrison just walking onto that stage, and there's still people, the bassist is like playing one of part of the songs of his album, and he comes on stage and there's still people, I mean, I don't know how this is edited, to be fair, but there's still people, I think, are looking at him thinking, this isn't him. And as soon as he starts singing, the whole place just erupts. And he also says, thanks for keeping me alive. So, like, keeping his music alive. I thought that was a beautiful touch.
And I think we've talked about this before in reference to artists and albums, and there will always be the allure in the musician who comes in and goes too soon. And you'll have a fan base that do keep his or her music kind of going. But I think what George's trying to say is, in reflection, you're sort of talking to the level of like someone like Tupac not being dead, and the American audience like kind of going to see him live 20 years later. Like, that's how much this live show meant to the South African. You know, it's massive. Well, I mentioned Tupac just because of the allure of a kind of a story told death is what I mean. You all know I love him, Elvis. You know, he died in the bathroom on prescription drugs. You know,
I think my mistake with what the two people I said, Elvis and Jim Morrison, I don't want to get hung up on it too much. Like, they were famous anyway. This guy was just plucked from obscurity. But I suppose he was huge in South Africa.
Well, there was one, this is sort of slightly off topic as such, but there was, well, he obviously had two albums in 70 and 71, Cold Fact and then Coming From Reality. And then there's live albums, obviously, in 1998, which, of course, why wouldn't you have made a live album of that show? It's called Live Fact. But actually, in 1981, there was an Australian live album called Rodrigo Alive, which made me, obviously, no criticism here, but it did make me think, like, where the hell was that album? Like, when they're doing this research, obviously...
Well, that was my point when I was doing my spiel. Like, the director skirts around the facts that there is actually another album out there. But 81, it's still not... If it's not going to... I mean, I don't know how well it did in the sales.
Well, I get what you're saying, but my point is...
There's no internet, there's no...
I know, but it's called... Like,
the publicity would have just been around the city.
True, but the fact it's called Rodriguez Alive, like, for me, that's a play on, like, playing live.
Everyone thought he'd
so, like, missing. I almost feel like, again, and I suppose that's the allure, and that's, again, there's no criticism of Malick's storytelling. It's not that. And, you know, at the end of the day, even in 2010, 11, 12, when obviously this documentary was probably being sort of developed, thought of, and then obviously shot, like, the internet was still only 20 years old. You know, where we sit now, and we can pretty much research anything, and it's all there. Like, we are talking about progression. But again, I think we have to revert back to the two parts of this pod. Is it's just a beautifully shot piece of art. It's fantastic. It's told in a perfect kind of tempo. I don't think there's any part of the film I'm thinking I'm bored. His introduction to other main individuals who kind of contribute to the life and times.
His whole life is, all right, is the mystery may have been exaggerated because of the live album in the early 80s, but his whole life, all the songs suit this documentary of the way it's filmed. And I think the director does a really beautiful job of creating that narrative with the music. I think that just works.
The art of the whole documentary, from front cover to film, is brilliant. It really is. And you can see why it had so much, so many accolades and so much positivity towards it. I think it won Best Academy Award for Best Documentary. Like, that's phenomenal. Like, because I don't think it was shot on a massive budget. He ran out of money, as I said before. It doesn't look like it's shot on particularly high production, but again, it's weird because being a guy just short of his 40s and watching the progression of media from sort of my teenage years to now, 2012 was a long time ago in technology, and obviously you're talking about footage from the 70s in South Africa or whatever. Like, it's actually a really nice story of a kind of technology moving along as well, because you can see the story of the internet and understanding and trying to research and contact people. And it was the internet forums that managed to get this told, because his daughter reaches out to the documentary maker to say, I think you might be talking about my dad, sort of type thing. Is that, have I remembered that right, Joe? That's, yeah. Which again, is this sort of fantastic story of like cross-generational technology and information. I think that's great. I really do. I think in this day and age that, you know, we're not just watching, you know, a kind of, you know, high gloss, shiny production piece. It's grainy.
I like I like the way there's room for wonder as well. The way it breathes, like, there is no wonder really anymore with how fast you can get information. So this documentary, it did make you just wonder about what life was like back then and how nobody found out about him or knew about him or was able to easily locate him.
Back to the point that you and I are both kind of like skeptically trying to sort of like revere this sort of early 80s Australian success, you almost don't want to know about that. I don't mind kind of being a bit aha after the fact, but
stop ruining it for me.
But it would ruin the film. It would ruin the film. And then the day,
if that came out,
I think there's a fine line, but a definite line for documentary storytelling and journalism. Journalism should be telling facts. Documentary telling should be, you know, creating a story without lying. And I'm not saying he should really have left that out, maybe refer back to it later on in the film, but you are telling a story of someone's life, and you've got to keep people entertained. And like we said at the start of the pod this evening, is we're sort of, it would bring the film to an abrupt weirdness, I think, if you said, oh, you know, this mystery. Oh, yeah, but there was an album 10 years later, and here we are 15 years later. Like, it would be weird. It wouldn't work. And at the end of the day, we watch documentaries for entertainment as well as education. So I think the director made the right decision to do this with a documentary. And I think it's okay to criticise it because of it now. I think it's all right. I think that's... And he probably knew.
Perfectly fine.
Well, Malik probably knew that would happen. So I think, you guys, you can all tell that we both thoroughly enjoyed not just watching, but certainly now discussing before this documentary. It's at this point, as with any album review or documentary review, we move to our star rating. George, over to you, the star rating, my friend.
5 out of 5. I would give this, but now I'm thinking more like 4.9 out of 5, just because of the 80s live album. Irritates me a little bit. It grates on me. But
can I just say, I actually think if we're rating the documentary, it's got to be 5 out of 5 because he doesn't allude to that, because the documentary's better for it. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but we're not given all the information.
I don't mind that, because I can live with that.
But it's not a fictional. It's not a fictional.
No, but he's not. Again, I know what you're saying, and I can imagine people shouting at this podcast, going, "You're wrong, Steve. He's telling Porky."
They usually do.
They do. But
I'm sticking with 4.9.
Okay.
Put it down in the pad. We've got this big pad where Stephen keeps all my star ratings.
Well, I'll cross
what
it
did
out
you think of? We laminate them and put them around the office. So, what did you think about the music? The actual His music.
I mean, very up my street. I instantly knew that it comes from sort of a lot of... Me and George, we cross quite regularly with our music tastes, but this is, you know, sort of... Jordan's probably got a maturer, older, kind of like school of singer-songwriter, the Bob Dylans, the James Taylors. I kind of progressed a bit further on with kind of more modern singer-songwriters, but we enjoy our singer-songwriters, and I mean, honestly, the artist we've not actually mentioned that he reminded me the most of was Ben Harper. I heard instant kind of like Aussie hippie vibes, which I know he sounds very Bob Dylan-esque, and the lyrics are quite political and kind of, you know, fighting a good battle. But I got Ben Harper vibes. Brilliant, yeah, really. I'm gonna listen to him, and I'm gonna watch this documentary again, because I think it's a documentary you can take a lot of enjoyment out of. Mm-hmm. I would actually quite like it to be a audio documentary, because I don't think you need it to be visual. As much as I love the visual, the storytelling side of it's great. I mean, there's a massive movement currently in audio documentary. I think it would convert really well into an audio documentary. You know, like the BBC Sounds do fantastic stuff with like telling a story. I think it could convert really well. But yeah, thoroughly enjoyed the music, thoroughly enjoyed the podcast.
The podcast's good. Yeah, what about
the documentary. I enjoyed this podcast as well. I'm enjoying talking about it. You've gone 4.9 out of 5. I can't disagree. I can't disagree that it's worth 4 out of 5. I just think it's a pretty seamless story and narrative documentary. Yeah, I think it's great. Really, really enjoyed it. So yeah, 4.9 star rating, our best yet of 2. So well done, Malik. Brilliant storytelling. We've not done this before, but we're trying to develop our features, because we can't do the good, the bad, and the rad, as that would be odd. But we can certainly nod to parts of the documentary that we highlight as a real enjoyable piece. George, what caught your ears and eyes on this one? What one bit of the documentary did you enjoy the most?
That he was alive! Sixto Rodriguez! I couldn't even say his name. Sixto Rodriguez, he's alive! That was me trying to pretend. You remember that Flash? Flash, he's alive! From that movie. I just thought I'd inject a bit of passion into the podcast. The fact he's alive, when I first watched it, absolutely blew me away. I thought, bloody hellfire, he's alive. But also the passion of the people in South Africa that enjoyed his music. I really thought that was such a nice thing to watch. Just the admiration in their eyes and how lovingly they talk about him, never having met him, just through these two albums.
Well, not just met him, like they'd never seen him. Like,
yeah, well, there's one photo of him sat down, isn't there?
Yeah, like he's got this album cover. It's phenomenal. It's like the love and affection that he gathers simply from, 12 tracks on an album. Like, it's amazing. It's really cool. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. And I think the director plays really well on the apartheid storytelling part of the documentary, but doesn't overkill it. It doesn't become like a political piece. It's a real strong...
It's of the time. It's where... Yeah. The album was it's where the people were that were enjoying the album at the time.
Absolutely. I think for me, my highlight of the pod, I do enjoy the reveal. I think the reveal's very good, because you're sort of not expecting it. I think the only thought I had is the multiple rumours made me question, well, if there's multiple rumours, which one's real, if any at all. But actually, the bit I enjoyed in the documentary, the simple cinematography and, sorry to use a twatty word, but the mise-en-scène is just, it's just beautiful. It's a really beautiful
For the
shot.
Person who said he would like it to be an audio documentary, you're now telling me that it was beautifully shot.
Well, because that's the platform I saw it in. So,
very good point. A very good answer.
I would enjoy listening to it, but I thoroughly enjoyed seeing it. And you don't just fall down a rabbit hole of live stock footage, which music documentaries can sometimes do. It's a really, really beautiful imagery telling the story. In fact, to the point where clearly where there's a bit of a shift towards the end of the film, you can see there's a different style. I said that before. I definitely prefer the original version, what shot on, I think it's 8mm, I said before. Yeah, I mean, 16mm. It was, yeah, it's a beautiful film. And for me, the simplicity of that, I really enjoyed. I always would and have enjoyed documentaries that carry that kind of beautiful storytelling visually. So, yeah. But that's great, because I think you and me have highlighted the two things that probably would keep an audience watching this documentary, which is great. So, yeah, success. Thoroughly enjoyed. Would recommend anyone to go and watch this one. Wasn't easy to find, to honest with you. We had to dig quite deep into some weird web pages to try and get access to this one.
I beg your pardon.
But if you can get your hands on it, or you can get a stream, watch it. Good hour and a half of your life well spent. Have a glass of wine and enjoy it all.
Exactly right.
So, nice one everyone for listening, as always. Please do take a moment to like, subscribe, and even comment on any of our rbr.music Instagram or any platform communications. We love talking to you guys, and please keep recommending albums and now music documentaries. It's amazing to engage with you guys, and we want to know if we're talking rubbish. We want to know if we're talking not rubbish. And keep listening and
that
keep telling.
Thesaurus I bought you is doing well.
Well, it's late on a Friday night, you know.
Yeah.
Long week coming to an end. Thanks, guys, for listening. We look forward to talking at you again in the very near future. Cheers.